Brady. Olivia Cortez, the Mesa woman caught up in the controversial recall election of Senate President Russell Pierce, is now going to court herself.
Cortez is asking the state Supreme Court to stamp it and halt the upcoming Friday hearing. A Superior Court judge granted the hearing after opposing attorneys say they've got new evidence she's a sham candidate.
Border Patrol agents find nearly a ton of marijuana in an abandoned pickup near Sonoyta.
They discovered 85 bundles of marijuana in the cab, as well as in the bed of the truck under some plywood that was concealing the narcotics.
ASU police searching for men who robbed three women inside a campus building.
A black male adult who's about 18 to 22 years old, about 5'10".
An employer sanctions raid in Mesa Home Improvement Company. Six workers illegally in the country using false IDs arrested.
That's common with many cases like this. We gather any supporting documentation that we can find in the workplace that supports the identity theft case.
George Tanner, Arizona News.
This check of your KVNX traffic is a service of Mattress Firm. In the 4 o'clock hour, look for an injury accident, 51st Avenue at Bell Road. Also, we do have an injury fender bender, Camelback Road, just east of 7th Street. We have a couple ladders in the roadway, eastbound Loop 202 at Alma School. Coming today to beat the national Tempur-Pedic price increase and save up to $300 on select models. Plus, get 0% financing for 3 years only at Mattress Firm. Here's your Wednesday afternoon FOFO.
Chet, thank you very much. We have our second weather system moving into the state as we speak. Breezy to windy conditions. Much colder air coming in today and tomorrow. Only mid-70s. We will have scattered showers around the deserts. And then we clear things out later today for a pretty nice weekend. Jim out. KVNX News Talk Radio, 1100.
Thank you, Jimmy. Currently, we are at 81 degrees. Our next news will be in 30 minutes or when it breaks. You're listening to KFNX News Talk Radio 1100. I'm Chet Reynolds, and you're up to date.
Review time already, Patterson.
Matthews.
I see. Look around you, Patterson. Do you want to be boss of this place? Me either. What are you having for dinner?
Well,
you know what I'm having for dinner, Patterson? Prime rib, and I'm going to be looking out over the beautiful Colorado River. That's why I'm the boss, because I know how to live like a boss.
I want to have a boss dinner.
Well, then you got to get yourself to Laughlin, Nevada, Patterson.
I'll do it.
Let's go. You're driving.
Here, anyone can afford to be the boss. Laughlin, Nevada. It's like you own the place. Plan your next getaway at visitlaughlin.com.
And here you are, ladies. Today's dessert special.
Jen, do you smell that? Smells like rotten eggs.
Could it be a gas leak?
We need to call Southwest Gas.
Southwest Gas?
They add a rotten egg odorant to their gas, so you know right away if there's a leak.
Excuse me, ladies, but you need to leave the restaurant. We might have a gas leak.
Hey, what about my dessert?
You'll have to save those calories for later.
If you ever smell the rotten egg odor, call Southwest Gas and 911 any time of the day. Your safety is our priority at Southwest Gas.
Stay connected to all things KFNX. Log on now at 1100KFNX.com.
This is Legalese, where the law is always on your side. Now introducing your host, a longtime veteran of the courts, Dennis Willinchek.
Thank you, Chet. Well, you know, the legal community referred to that as a fraud. This is not Dennis Willinchek. This is Jack Willinchek. Dennis Willinchek is my dad. This morning he had a hospital medical issue, and right now he's listening to the show in bed on a lot of morphine. It's probably the best way to listen to the show. today on the show, we'll be talking about the idea that we should have a state bank. We're honored to have State Representative John Fillmore, who is the Republican representative for Legislative District 23, Apache Junction. We also have Stephen Slavinsky, who is a senior economist at the Goldwater Institute. I think we'll also be playing some clips from Michelle Reagan, who is a state senator, about job creation and also in particular about this idea of creating a state bank. So I'm going to turn right to you, Representative Fillmore. The state bank is, you know, I'm a history buff. It's a real old concept. You know, way back when you had John Hamilton talking about starting up the national bank. Originally, there was a lot of, you know, the conservatives in that day were very opposed to the idea, you know, the conservatives in that day being Thomas Jefferson and others. And today, likewise, a lot of conservatives are opposed to the idea. So let me ask you as my first question, what do you say to conservatives who view the idea of a state bank as, you know, a piece of socialism.
First off, Jack, thank you for having me here. And let me say this with all due respect. My fellow conservatives will really appreciate what I am attempting to do here. I am a very conservative Republican out of Legislative District 23. My employees and some of my businesses, I'm an entrepreneur, I put together about 17 businesses, have said that I'm so tight I squeak when I walk. But here's my idea.
You're making diamonds. I've heard that joke, though.
The federal government is like a freight train heading down a road towards socialism. They've taken over the big banks. They're controlling the credit. They're destroying what the greatness of this country is all about. And I know that in order for a free economic system to be out there, we need to have the availability of credit and money. Historically, the little guy, the guy that built America, the guy that went out and borrowed on the equity of his home and started a store, a retail store, a heating and cooling company, or a lumber yard, or anything of that nature, we had that ability to draw on it. The federal government has ruined that with what's happened in the housing crisis over the last couple of years. And now the federal government is tightening up the credit with the FDIC regulations. They're eating the small banks and things of that nature. So as a result, I look at this as a form of socialism to use this as a weapon to make credit available to the great people in the state of Arizona, where entrepreneurialism is still alive and where we have that rugged individualism that's a signal of the great Southwest United States, where we can borrow and open up the small businesses and tell the rest of the country Arizona is on the rise and we're open for business.
You know, I'd like to ask you to explain some of the details of how this would actually work. You were telling me earlier that it's modeled in part after the Bank of North Dakota, right?
That is correct. North Dakota is the only state in the union that has a state-operated bank. And it is very hard for me, again, to suggest a state-operated anything. But when I gave some thought to it and I started looking into it, it's not just North Dakota. Actually, Puerto Rico, which is a subsidiary of the United States, has a state-operated bank, a state-controlled bank. And they're one of the few countries which has weathered this world recession as well. North Dakota has 3.9% unemployment, I believe the figure is now. That were, what, 9.7, 9.3, something of that? Mm-hmm. They finished 2010 $100 million to the black. We were almost $1 billion to the red.
Right.
They did not have one bank in the state of Arizona close up during shop. Whereas just within the last 90 days, we had a local bank, I believe it was out of Prescott, called Summit Bank, that the FDIC closed. And I want to tell you about that bank. It had $79.8 million. And I might be off $1 or $2 million on these numbers, but I'm not far off. $79 million to the black, $61 million to the red. In my opinion, it's still a bank that is solvent. But the FDIC regulation says no, and the Fed shut it down. Then it's the small banks that have the ability to lend to the little guys out in our rural communities that they can go to, where people have personal relationships. They went to high school and that with a banker. They know that their credit is good, their word is their bond, and they can borrow. What's happening is the federal government has been bailing out the big banks, the Banks of America and Chase. And those people are not stakeholders in Arizona.
Right, right. You were saying to me earlier that the bank would be a partnership bank. Can you explain that?
Yes, a partnership bank. One of the ideas of the North Dakota Bank is that it has grown to the position where it has become a partnership bank, where it has the ability to work with and through the smaller community banks to loans, kind of like the SBA does with some of the loans, but without all of the red tape. So as a result, it's easier for the small banks to operate. They don't have to borrow. And I want to say that, with all due respect, that there's a lot of additional benefits with the Arizona State Bank. Had we had the State Bank 4 years ago, instead of the state of Arizona selling all of our state buildings,
right,
we could have financed them with our left and been paying back all of that money. And we're talking about hundreds of millions of dollars. Case in point is I'll take just the tourist center down in downtown Phoenix, which we built, I'm not right on the penny, but I'm not far off, $390 some odd million. by the time we pay that off in the year 2043 at 27-something million dollars a year, we're going to pay 820 or 860-some-odd million dollars. And that additional $500 million could be coming back to the great state of Arizona.
Right. Again, we're talking with State Representative John Fillmore. And we've also got Stephen Slavinsky here, who's a senior economist at the Goldwater Institute. Stephen, I'm going to turn to you real quick. I know that you weren't necessarily prepared to talk about the state bank issue. I don't know if you have any comments.
Oh, no. I like many of the people in the policy community here in Arizona, we're only now learning a lot about this stuff. And as you say, it is an idea that's been around for quite some time. The North Dakota Bank, I think, was established in the early 20th century, 1990. Progressive movement, a lot of state constitutions out here in the West were written during that time. And so my general thought is maybe sympathetic to what you're trying to do in the sense that I understand that the credit system has become dysfunctional mainly as a result of federal policy. But as a result of that, I guess I'm concerned that the fix may not really do much more than possibly cause more problems on average. And so, for instance, I would say the concern that we have about lending, and I think that it's a very big concern, the fact that you've got banks that are holding on basically to the reserves. And in anticipation, I would say, of this general uncertainty in the economy. And that's not something that's going to go away until we have some kind of clarity on federal law, on federal tax rates, on entitlement burdens, on the credit system generally, and also on things such as Obamacare and regulatory issues that are coming down the pike. And so things like that are certainly outside the control of Arizona. And so the question I've got, or I guess the question I would have, at least from a policy perspective, is whether this type of fix is only going to sort of just pile on something that is a broader concern about uncertainty. Because in a sense, we're dealing obviously with an international capital market. And it seems to me that there's only so much you can do to actually remedy those questions without changing some fundamental things about the system. I'm not so sure this would really get to that level.
Well, Steve and Jack, I can understand your hesitancy on this issue, but let me give you a little bit of additional background or strength to my argument is that it is beneficial, and that is that the bank helps other banks. It is not an FDIC-regulated bank, the State Bank of North Dakota, nor would the State of Arizona Bank be one. But what it would enable the small banks to be able to do is lend a little bit higher ratio so it frees up some of that money. There's only two institutions in this world that creates money. The governments, which just print it, and that's not good for anybody. But banks create it artificially in error based upon the ratios they have in their bank. So the State Bank of Arizona, backed up by the goodwill of the people, the money would not be at risk. Albeit the State Bank of North Dakota had losses infinitesimally smaller than any of the other banks across the country, less than 0.5% as their loss ratio. And yet at the same time, they were able to help a lot of the smaller banks lend money to the individuals that want to bring jobs and wanted to do the things necessary, make the capital equipment expenditures.
Okay. We're going to have to take a break, but when we come back, we're talking to State Representative John Fillmore, also Stephen Slavinsky from the Goldwater Institute, about possibly starting a state bank in the state of Arizona. This is Legalese with Dennis Wilenchek on KFNX.
Check us out on the web at 1100kfnx.com.
Since 1991, the law offices of Wilenchek & Bartness have provided quality business litigation service that you'd find at a big firm with small firm atmosphere. Wilenchek & Bartness specialize in cases of breach of contract, real estate litigation, construction defect, business fraud, and breach of fiduciary duty. For professional yet very personal legal representation, call Wilenchek & Bartness today at 602-606-2810, 602-606-2810.
Would you like to spend an evening with famed cigar maker Ernesto Perez Carrillo? 21 Degrees Cigars presents two opportunities in October for all cigar lovers to meet Ernesto. Stop by 21 Degrees Cigars in Scottsdale October 13th from 4 to 8 p.m. Then October 14th, 21 Degrees Cigars hosts a special cigar dinner at the Capitol Grill starting at 6:30 p.m. Two opportunities to meet famed cigar maker Ernesto Perez Carrillo October 13th and 14th. For more info, call 480-551-2121. 480-551-2121.
I have the answer. Call me for this link and you will call me back.
I have the answer. Who was the dynamic leader that history tells us that when he went to meet his maker, that his eyes were not dim nor his vigor abated? I have the answer. I urge you, choose science and not celebrities in your pursuit of an active lifestyle well beyond statistical predictions. I have the answer. Is your energy level low and your health insurance costs high? I have the answer. Tired of buying grocery store produce from third world countries that have been sprayed with who knows what? I have the answer. I have nutrient-dense, locally grown produce and so much more. It costs a few bucks, but it's worth $1 million. Charisma Culture is our name and applying gifts is our game. I have the answer. 602-762-2601. 602-762-2601. 602-762-2601.
Arizona's News Talk Leader, KFNX, AM 1100.
Welcome back to Legalese with Dennis Wilenchek. Dennis Wilenchek is in the hospital today. He has some medical issues, so this is Jack Wilenchek, his son, covering for him. Today on the show, we're talking about State Representative John Fillmore's proposal to start a state bank. We also have on the show Stephen Slavinsky, who is a senior economist at the Goldwater Institute. And, you know, during the break, I know, Stephen, you had some questions about how it would be capitalized, how the bank would be capitalized. Maybe you'd like to respond to that, Representative Fillmore, on the air, about how the bank is you're saying there was going to be reserves.
Yes.
The way does it get the money, in other words?
There is a way to get the money and the capitalization on it. And I have actually spoken to some people about capitalizing the State Bank of Arizona. And I've received a lot of positive feedback. Would I like to put that on the table as to who those people are at this moment? No. I would rather not until I'm able to actually get the bank, the bank bill passed. But, if you look at the state of Arizona, you stop and think about the quasi public-private institutions we've had here. The SEF, the former Workmen's Compensation, which had literally billions of dollars in that, and that would have been more than an ample. Or you look at Salt River Project with the ability and the amount of money that they deposit in it. And this is an investment for the state of Arizona for the benefit of the state, the benefit of our cities and towns, because our cities and towns would be able to borrow against this, and it would enable them to raise their bond rating and at the same time borrow at a more competitive rate, because a partnership bank has the ability of going to the Federal Reserve and operating as the same as an FDIC-operated bank, but without all of the encumbrance that they have. And, you know, Stephen raised a point about the former bank, the banks that are out there, and in this economy, the concerns about the debt equity that they have on their show. This is a new bank. This is brand new. This is fresh, and this has the opportunity to do nothing but grow and grow for the state of Arizona.
Well, let me ask you, you also mentioned over the break that this would be a depository bank, so explain what that really means to people. That means that this is going to be another bank that they can put their money into, right?
That is absolutely correct. So as a result, a retiree in East Mesa or Apache Junction, where I'm from, or a businessman down in Tucson, or a retired little old lady up in Sun City that might want to feel secure and pay money into the state of Arizona as an investment, could put their money in that bank.
Right. During the last segment, you mentioned that you mentioned the fact that the state has sold off a lot of state buildings and leased them back. I don't claim to be an economist, but I was just looking over some of the state budgets over the past few years. That's accounted for a lot of a significant amount of money going into the state coffers. You said that if we had a state bank, we wouldn't have had to do that. Did I understand you correctly?
Well, that is correct, and it's one of the wealth issues that people have. That to be your own banker, to pay able to pay yourself your own interest, is a very good thing for individuals or any kind of a corporation. So since we'd have the state bank and it would be capitalized, we would have actually been able to mortgage our buildings and be paying ourselves back the interest rates on that. And the amount of it is huge, as I was trying to say when I was talking about the convention center in Phoenix, where we lent 300 and some odd, 50 or some odd million dollars, but we're going to pay 800 and some odd million dollars over the life of that guarantee that we've put on that building.
Yeah. Stephen, if you don't mind, I'd like to ask you a little bit of background on the concept of a state bank. I don't know how much you know about the bank in North Dakota or why that's been so successful.
Not exactly quite sure why the bank in North Dakota would be successful. I mean, part of it could be a factor of, and this is just all speculation on my part, and we talked a little bit about this on the break as to, you know, if this is such an old idea, why haven't a lot of states actually glommed onto it? Part of it could just be circumstantial. We just haven't really been
in only North Dakota and, and the territory.
And part of it, and part of it could just be we've never seen macroeconomic situation as we're seeing right now, and that's probably certainly true. But the other question I would have would be if there's something unique to North Dakota, and perhaps Representative Fulmer has some thoughts on this. Maybe there's something unique to North Dakota. It's a heavily agricultural state, for instance. Perhaps this bank would work best in a more homogenized economy as opposed to something that we're trying to become more diversified in that sense. And the other question I have is that the broader question about banks and just banking theory generally, of course, you know, this goes back to Adam Smith even, the idea that banks, in a sense, can create this value and this wealth by creating a reputational advantage by saying we're not going to collapse. And I think one of the reasons our credit system is dysfunctional now is because the federal government, and actually all governments really, but the federal government mainly, has intruded itself into this reputational factor and, in a sense, given this implicit guarantee that if a bank does something too risky and they might fail, this whole too-big-to-fail doctrine is what kicks in. They'll bail them out. Of course, obviously we're seeing the byproduct and the fallout from that right now. And so I guess my cynical thought about this as well. Here's a state bank, and this not only has not just an implicit guarantee of some kind of claim to public backstopping, but it seems like a very explicit one, it being a public state bank. And so I'd be worried that might incentivize some potential types of risks that we may not want to engage in, that private sectors may in and of itself may not engage in. And while I think risk-taking is an extraordinarily important thing for an entrepreneurial and growing economy, I do wonder whether this kind of creates a subsidy to certain types of lending over others. And while, again, I think credit needs to be freed up, but, again, I think this is a broader macroeconomic concern about whether that credit is there to be lent to potentially profit-making institutions and whether this would crowd out something or whether this would create some kind of advantage for one bank over another that may end up over time needing state funds to get bailed out.
Well, Stephen, that's a good question, and let me say this with all due respect to that, is that as a state bank, as a partnership bank, the Bank of North Dakota had the ability to aid a lot of the community banks, the smaller banks, to make the small loans that the big banks don't want to deal with. And quite frankly, when we start talking about the big banks, the ones that are left, the ones that the federal government has bailed out, what have they really done with the money? Bank of America, which took $45 billion in TARP funds, turned around and let $7 billion to a China construction bank within 3 weeks. Citigroup, which got $45 billion in TARP funds, cut 51,175 jobs and set up 427 subsidiaries in tax haven countries around the world. That would not do anything to help America or the state of Arizona. Chase, with $25 billion in TARP funds, cut 14,000 jobs and focused on expanding their overseas investments. This is a bank that is unique to the state of Arizona, and it will be focused as such. Part of the criteria in setting it up will be that the stringent regulations we would ensure are to benefit the state of Arizona and not the money going out of state. It is to be a community bank that will assist the other community banks, a partnership bank. And I can understand your concern on that, because when you start talking about banking, and I can appreciate what you're saying about the ratios and banks being able to loan, create that money out of free, that actually goes even back beyond when banks were created, when people used to carry gold, and then they would shave the gold off in parts, to my understanding. And I want you to understand, I sell swamp coolers and fireplaces for a living, so I've had to digest a lot of this as a state legislature. But this is an idea to stop the socialistic crates coming out of Washington, D.C., to enable the entrepreneurs in Arizona and America to have funds within Arizona to open up businesses and to capitalize and bring us jobs. And it's all about jobs.
Right. Well, mostly it sounds like it's all about concentrating on the Arizona economy. If the money's not going to a state bank, it's going to these national banks. And even worse, then it's going to, you know, international companies.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Okay. There was one more thing I think I wanted to ask you about. I saw that the state of California is currently considering a bill like this. Is that right?
State of California, state of Washington, state of Oregon, New York is doing a study on it. A lot of the other states have. yes, historically, there's only been one state, but we've never had the situation. You know, as I said when we first opened up, far be it from me, an extremely conservative Republican, to be talking about a state-owned anything. But I see this as an effective tool that we can use against the federal government and the restriction of you know, our free enterprise system.
Right, right. Okay. For the rest of the show, we'll be talking about, in general, the subject of creating jobs in the state of Arizona. For sure, that's something that you aim to do with a state bank. I'd like to turn to Stephen Slavinsky to ask a little bit about the just to give a background on the state of Arizona's budget, on a little bit of the history of our budget problems. You know, I'll be the first one to admit that I don't, you know, I keep my head in the sand a little bit. I've been hearing some chatter about how bad the budget is, but maybe you can explain just how bad it is.
Well, and actually, Representative Fillmore probably is privy to even more stuff than none of us are. It is general sense, and this is actually not just true of Arizona. And you see this in budget cycles going back 50 years, is you tend to get boom and bust cycles, just like you have in the economy, you have on the budget cycle as well. And when times are good, government tends to spend more and more, and then when times are bad, they just end up having to cut. And so it creates these large gaps. And that's exactly what happened in Arizona's case. And now, in terms of the recovery, I get the sense that some of the revenue is coming in above trend. So it's not as grim as it could have been. Certainly not as good as other states. Actually, more specifically, it's actually a lot better than some other states. So in terms of where we were versus where we're going, I think that's a broader discussion about competing policies, and I'd like to talk more about that after the break.
Sure. We'll come back to that right after the break. We'll be talking about the state of Arizona's budget, and if we don't have any money, what can the state even do to create jobs? This is Jack Wilinchek filling in for Dennis Wilinchek on KFNX.
CNN Radio, I'm Jim Riddle. Sarah Palin puts the speculation to rest. She says she is not running for president in 2012. She issued a statement late today. CNN's Peter Hamby says quite a few conservatives are glad to hear that.
If you look at polling, most Republicans did not want her to run for president. ABC News and the Washington Post released a poll earlier this week that showed, I believe, two-thirds of Republicans said that she should not run for president.
A federal judge in Alabama has denied an emergency motion aimed at blocking parts of the state's new immigration law. The appeal had been filed by a coalition of civil rights groups and the U.S. Justice Department. Thousands of anti-corporate demonstrators were in New York's financial district again today, and for the first time they were joined by a number of trade unions. Their main anger is directed at corporate influence in politics and government bailouts of financial institutions. Stocks were up today. The Dow gained 131 points. The most trusted name in news. This is CNN Radio.
It was on a news radio. A 7-year-old girl was hospitalized. She was hit by a car crossing a street in Glendale.
She was crossing the street. Unknown at this time if she was in any type of school crosswalk or designated crosswalk.
A 34-year-old woman from Mexico, among those picked up in the desert, she had taser, brass knuckles, and pepper spray with her.
In this particular situation, we're pretty certain that she was using these for personal protection and that she really had no interest in using them toward any type of law enforcement.
A longtime security guard at Tempe High School is accused of stealing money from the football fund.
Mr. Baker denied having keys to that locked area during the search warrant at his residence. Detectives did locate a key to that locked area inside a Bible in his home.
And Arizona's weather is going to turn wet, maybe white.
Well, up on the top of the peak, so it's a good bet that there'll be several inches, if not more, up there above the 9,000-foot level. Beneath that, it's a little bit more iffy.
George Tanner, Arizona News.
This check of your KVNX traffic, a service of P.F. Chang's. Disabled vehicles all over the valley. Look for one southbound Loop 101 at the 202. Also, we have a wreck. Disabled vehicle westbound U.S. 60 at the Loop 101. Another disabled vehicle eastbound U.S. 60 at 24th Street. And a fourth disabled vehicle eastbound Loop 202. That is at Gilbert Road. P.F. Chang's Triple Happiness Happy Hour features premium cocktails like the Yuzu Ginger Mojito and the Dragon Martini every day from 3 to 6 p.m. Here's your Wednesday afternoon forecast.
Jim Howell from the KFNX Weather Center. Our second strong system coming in late tonight and early tomorrow morning with showers in the greater Phoenix area. Windy conditions also with this second front. And the cooler air means daytime highs tomorrow and Friday only mid-70s, gradually warming over the weekend. Jim Howell, KFNX Newstalk Radio, 1100.
Thank you, Jimmy. KFNX News time is 4:33. Currently in Midtown, we are at 81 degrees. Our next news will be in 30 minutes or when it breaks. You're listening to KFNX News Talk Radio 1100. I'm Chet Reynolds, and you're up to date.
Since 1991, the law offices of Willinchek & Bartness have provided quality business litigation service that you'd find at a big firm with small firm atmosphere. Willinchek & Bartness specialize in cases of breach of contract, real estate litigation, construction defect, business fraud, and breach of fiduciary duty. For professional yet very personal legal representation, call Willinchek & Bartness today at 602-606-2810, 602-606-2810.
HomeSuiteIncome7.com, the powerful work-at-home opportunity that creates amazing before and after stories.
Before, I was an overworked, stressed-out single mom, working a lot of hours, never time for my daughter, never time to cook. My days off, I spent running errands, you know, grocery shopping, laundry, all that kind of stuff. It was very difficult.
Then Cindy discovered HomeSuiteIncome7.com.
Now I'm home with my daughter. I control my own time. We live an incredible life. I miss nothing in her life. Every recital, every field trip, every single week I volunteer in her class, so I know her classmates well. And we live in a beautiful home. She's got horses, and, you know, it's my dream.
Earn like a CEO from home. Turn your commute time from 2 hours to 20 steps. Log on for free information at HomeSuiteIncome7.com. It could change your life.
It's my dream job.
HomeSuiteIncome7.com. That's HomeSuiteIncome, the number 7.com.
Hi, I'm Steve Cates, host of A Call to Rights here on KFNX. If you haven't heard our show every Saturday from noon to 2, you're missing out on the greatest in news, commentary, and guests discussing your rights under our Constitution. The latest updates on how to protect your rights from an out-of-control government. And you'll learn our most important motto, how never to be a victim. If you're concerned with the direction our country is going, tune in and learn how to help take it back. Take back your rights on A Call to Rights with me, Steve Cates, Saturdays at noon on KFNX.
Log on and listen live. 1100KFNX.com.
Welcome back to Legalese on KFNX. This is your host, Jack Willinchek. I'm filling in for your regular host, Dennis Willinchek, who's laid up in the hospital. Today we've been talking about State Representative John Fillmore's proposal to start a state bank. We're going to shift gears a little bit here to talk about, in general, the issues with creating jobs in the state of Arizona, which to me starts out with our budget woes. I mean, if we can't get our own house in order, how are we going to help anybody else? Right before the break, I turned to Stephen Slavinsky, who's a senior economist at the Goldwater Institute, just to give a little bit of a background on the history of our deficit problems. I was saying, you know, again, I don't really keep up on a lot of this stuff as much as I should. If any of our listeners are in that same, you know, are like me, they've heard a little bit about the deficit problems, but they don't fully understand just how bad it is. Is that accurate to say?
Yeah, I mean, it does come down to general macroeconomic fundamentals, the fact that if you have a tax base that's, you know, it looks the way ours does, and you suddenly just have a macroeconomic drop-off, like most states, all states really, did, you're going to obviously have this huge gap in the financing. Part of it does come down to, I think, from a fundamental perspective, what you want government to do, the proper role of government. So I don't have as much of a problem with spending cuts overall as other people in government do. And that's because I think the government's doing too much based on certainly what its constitutional function should be. But then again, you know, a lot of states, and Arizona, I think, is one of them, you know, there are some efficiencies that you can get just by taking the actual current roles of government and finding better ways of doing things. And then there's other programs that I think need to be reformed on the whole. And so not every program is created equal in that sense. And so I think we need to be looking in sort of a line-by-line, frankly, approach. And I think that's what recessions force legislators to do, obviously, because they have to. There's only so many gimmicks they can play, like leasing the buildings to themselves and things of this sort. And that's, you know, I don't like the gimmicks, and I think they do force, I'm sorry, more specifically, they allow legislators and policymakers to avoid making the real hard decisions that need to be done on the policy side. So I don't know if this speaks to the general question about the history of the budget, but I think If I told you just a 10-year story, you'd probably just duplicate the 10-year story and go back every 10 years, and that's basically what happens, that you tend to see these boom and bust cycles. And so another broader question is, how do you avoid those boom and bust cycles in spending? One of the things that we like at the Goldwater Institute is some kind of limit on government spending that says government spending during the boom periods can't grow much faster. I like population plus inflation as a baseline, but then if you have a surplus beyond that, you put more of it into a rainy day fund. I think the rainy day fund needs to be bigger, for instance, than what it is currently to weather some of those downturns. And then once you've filled up the rainy day funds, you don't give an incentive to government to spend more. You actually give them an incentive to give the money back to the private sector when those surpluses do arise after you've made these deposits in the emergency funds. And so that's a structural change, and I realize there could be opposition from both sides for a number of reasons on such a limit, what I might call a regulator on spending. Cars can't go a certain limit, a speed limit. I mean, you do that same with government spending. There's really no regulator on speed of spending right now. So in that sense, structural change, I think, is going to be important. We were talking off the air about things like pension plans. So we've got these unfunded liabilities. All states do, by the way. That actually dwarf the overall general obligation debt in most states that they have. When you issue a bond to build a building or a road, it has a general obligation debt. It's a bond. It's an actual tangible piece of paper. It's an actual asset. But you've got these unfunded liabilities and these pension obligations that are actually underfunded because a lot of the folks who are receiving these benefits aren't paying the full amount of the cost of these things over time. And that's you saw that a lot back in the 40s and 50s in the private sector, but then it became extraordinarily expensive and actually turned out to be a flawed system. And so private sector very quickly over the past 40 years began to transition into what they call a defined contribution plan, where folks are actually, they're in control of their own money, but in a sense they're taking their own money, putting it into an actual tangible asset, and then being able to draw it down with annuities and things of that sort. Whereas the current system of a defined benefit plan is government says, okay, government worker, we're going to promise you this specific benefit, whether it's actually cost effective or not, or whether we can actually pay for it or not. And so you're finding these incentives are in place to effectively keep a system that's extraordinarily expensive and unsustainable over time. And so the goal should be, I think, to structure that program in such a way where younger workers and new workers can opt into a defined contribution plan and then slowly wean the problem away, I guess, from the taxpayers at that point. And getting there is tough because folks who are current beneficiaries, understandably so, don't want the system to change. And in a sense, you can create it so they don't necessarily have to give up a lot or any at all, for instance, depending upon if they're really old or very close to retirement. But the idea of maybe raising the amount of money that they're paying into the system in incremental fashion, that doesn't seem to me to be an unwarranted or a difficult type of policy to pursue. But unfortunately, there's a political reality there, too. So the economist in me can say, oh, this is easy to do. But the political reality is sometimes quite different.
Right. Well, for the political reality, we have Representative John Fillmore here on the show. And actually, I want to come back to something you said real quickly. You said there's no regulation of spending. In my research, I saw that, we all heard a lot about how there should be a balanced budget amendment to the U.S. Constitution a few months back. In my research, I saw that, I didn't realize it, that the Arizona Constitution, in fact, the Constitution of, I think, every state in the Union, has a balanced budget amendment. And I guess see what good it's done us, right? But I thought as part of that, there is some kind of a budget auditor. So isn't that a form of regulation? Explain to me why that is not doing what it's supposed to be doing.
Oh, so you mean like the Auditor General, for instance, office?
Correct.
And things of that sort? Well, actually, and correct me if I'm wrong, Representative Fillmore, but it looks to me as if when I look at the list of audits they have done, they're rather infrequent, somewhat sporadic. And it seems to me if it is a proper role of government to do this auditing, and I think it is, I, as a limited government conservative, wouldn't mind giving more money to the Auditor General if indeed they would do more frequent audits of a number of different programs. And there seem to be lots of things that we can find savings in. For instance, there was a report from the U.S. Department of Labor just recently that Arizona has a massively high overpayment rate for the unemployment insurance system. We're talking billions of dollars over a multi-year period. And what we've done is, of course, in the state of Arizona, we've actually borrowed money from the federal government. I think it's $300 million or something to that effect. And we've actually overpaid over that same period of time about $120 or $150 million or so. That's about half the money we borrowed, almost, from the federal government. So it seems to me as if we had an Auditor General office that had audited more frequently, and actually the last audit that I found was from 2005 or 2006. That was before the recession began. It seems to me that these sorts of safeguards can be put into place during the boom periods, but yet there's not as much attention to that kind of detail in those boom periods. And, yes, we do have a balanced budget requirement. But, it's you can have a balanced budget a budget that's balanced at 20% of United States GDP as you have at the federal level, or you can have it unbalanced at 16%. I mean, right. what we're looking at is the balance of the budget is only as far as the revenue can take you, really. So basically what that does is it says, well, as long as you got enough revenue to pay for what you're doing, you're going to be okay, which is good in the boom periods. But, of course, it doesn't work when you've got to really reassess what government's doing. And that in and of itself doesn't help you. It doesn't hurt you, per se. But in the boom periods, it doesn't create the kind of incentive you need to make sure you're not overspending in the boom periods, so you don't have this massive overhang once you reach the recession.
Also, I don't really know what the penalty is if the legislature can't balance the budget. It's not like, Warren Buffett was quoted as saying, well, if they can't, we should have an amendment to the Constitution that says if you can't balance the budget, then no legislator can run for another term. There's really nothing that, like you're saying, incentivizes or gives that any teeth.
Although, are there legal? I think there might be some legal ramifications if they didn't actually propose or didn't actually pass something that was. But even then, I think it comes down to sort of these soft kinds of reputational.
It's a soft penalty, The biggest penalty is for the legislatures have to go back to their constituents and say, we didn't do it, and we violated the law, per se. And there's always someone out there that's astute enough to point that out loudly in front of a group of about 50, and, the legislatures don't want to deal with that. But, Steve, you've hit it right on the head with that hammer, and the fact of the matter is during the boom times, we've done certain things. And some of the programs we find, for instance, is I've been reading the budget in preparation for next year, and we are focused not only on next year but on 2014 when that 1% sales tax goes away. And we have groups of us that are meeting and working together on that. But, some of the stuff that we've built into the system, I mean, it's like our Altex, which is our long-term health care program, that we pay people and we pay them 300% of the SSI. And while it's not a noxious statement when I say that, until you find out that the SSI is $2,000 for a single individual. And so you're paying them 300% on a monthly basis, that's $6,000. So we have people who qualify for some of this that's starting at $72,000 for a single individual is where it's capped, and $108,000 for family. And then we realize, why are we subsidizing? And the word entitlements, there used to be a social stigma when I'm a kid, I'm 62 years old, that welfare was bad and you would get off welfare. Well, now it's an entitlement, it's not welfare. And I believe a lot of it's just the political correctness of the time, the fact that we need to point out that what we're doing is not good. The fact that we're given 2 years of unemployment to someone, that's bad for America. It's bad for Arizona. And yet the federal government just keeps doing it. And a lot of the things that we're finding in our access programs, which outside of education is the big drain of all of our money, is mandated by government standards that we cannot bend from. And I believe it's something that it's a states' rights issue. I believe that our governor, the speaker, and the president of the Senate should unify as a body and start challenging the federal government right on that they cannot mandate to the state of Arizona. And if they mandate without paying for it, well, then we should just kind of ignore it.
Well, I know that it's not constitutional to send a direct mandate to the state. But you're saying even in the form of these, enticements for laws, you're saying we should stand up to that.
Absolutely. It's not just the enticements. A lot of the rules and regulations that they put down that they'll, let's say in the schools, they're going to offer you $50 million here, but they offer $100 million worth of restrictions that you have to abide by. And all of a sudden, in the schools, all they see is the $50 million. We want the $50 million.
Right.
Forget the fact that you're going to have to come up with another $50 million down the road.
Right. Okay, we're going to go take a break here in a moment. When we come back, we're talking to State Representative John Fillmore and Stephen Slavinsky from the Goldwater Institute about job creation in the state of Arizona and a lot of our budget issues, which at least in my mind are related. This is John Wilenchek on Legalese on KFNX.
Log on and listen to IMS in the Morning. IMS in the Morning. Only on 1100KFNX.com. Log on and listen live. Start your day right. Don't miss IMS in the Morning right here on KFNX.
Homeowners, did you know a burglar could break into your home and get away in just 5 minutes? A locked door may not be enough to keep a thief out of your home. Think about what you can lose, and then think about this. Now you can get a free security system monitored by ADT, the leader in home security. Pick up your phone now and get free hardware, free medical and fire alert, and free activation. It's an $850 value. Just call Protect Your Home, your authorized ADT dealer, at 1-800-948-7434. You'll get 24-hour protection, and there's no cost for parts or activation. So call now about a free security system monitored by ADT. Call 1-800-948-7434. $99 installation charge. 36-month monitoring agreement at $35.99 a month. Call for terms and conditions to this offer and protect your home license numbers. Call now. 1-800-948-7434. That's 1-800-948-7434.
Since 1991, the law offices of Willinchek & Bartness have provided quality business litigation service that you'd find at a big firm with small firm atmosphere. Willinchek & Bartness specialize in cases of breach of contract, real estate litigation, construction defect, business fraud, and breach of fiduciary duty. For professional yet very personal legal representation, call Willinchek & Bartness today at 602-606-2810, 602-606-2810.
He's the voice of choice. Lou Dobbs leads the independent nation. Monday through Friday at 5 p.m. Only on KFNX News Talk Radio 1100. And streaming live at 1100KFNX.com.
Welcome back to Legalese. This is your host for today, Jack or John Willinchek. Filling in for Dennis Willinchek. Before we went to the break, we were talking about creating jobs in the state of Arizona. You know, I'd be remiss if I didn't play a few pre-taped comments we have from State Senator Michelle Reagan. First of all, Michelle Reagan works on the chair. She's the chair of the Commerce Committee, which obviously has a lot to do with job creation. We asked her why companies aren't hiring in the state of Arizona. If you could play clip three, Chet.
We are seeing a lot of companies put off hiring right now. In many cases, some companies that could actually use extra people in their workforce. And the biggest reason is obviously funding. Banks aren't lending right now. We all know that. I believe that bank is a four-letter word right now.
Well, that goes right to what we were talking about in the first two segments with State Representative John Fillmore, which is the idea that we should have a state bank. That would be the solution to...
Absolutely, that would be the solution. And what it would do is enable the small banks to lend more. It enables the little entrepreneur, what America is all really about, the guy that can start the business himself to borrow and grow and hire and get the economy going. And that money churns. It stays in Arizona. That $1 becomes 10 by the time it's all finished.
Right. Well, I said that as the solution. I mean, for sure, that's a very direct solution. We were discussing it earlier in the show. Again, I have Stephen Slavinsky here from the Goldwater Institute, who is saying that that's a novel idea to you, at least, the idea to have a state bank.
Well, there's also more than one solution, I guess. I mean, and I guess the question would be, what really are we trying to maximize? And of course, we're trying to maximize employment. And I think we're also trying to maximize. Creation of prosperity in Arizona. And one of the things is going to come down to investment, and jobs, in a sense, are what they call a lagging indicator. It's what occurs after you've had the initial investment. So credit's going to be extraordinarily important in that sense. But part of credit is when you're lending, you've got, because you're always taking a risk. And so the question is how you're lowering the bar and lowering the threshold for the ability to actually make those types of loans and that type of risk and the ability to make the loan. I think we've actually got plenty of credit, as you say, locked up in banks right now. The question is why aren't they? They're lending. You got the uncertainty factor, but let's take that off the table for now. If you actually were able to find a way, and this is where tax policy comes in, a way of lowering the bar and lowering the tax burden on the return to that investment too. I think that could also unlock some of the stuff. And so I would say tax policy could play a role here as well. And I would argue that we need to be doing some kind of tax reform and lowering tax burdens in Arizona. I would even say goes directly as to attacking the idea of taxing capital gains in Arizona. We tax it as normal income now. And I know there's actually in the jobs bill that passed this session, there was some provisions to allow investments in Arizona small businesses, to allow those investors of those businesses to write off the capital gains to this type of thing. That kind of thing I think is going to be important. I would say broaden that across the board, but at the very least, it's at least an interesting, and I would say possibly even just as, perhaps even more potent, spur to, I think, investment generally. And that investment can come from all over the place, incidentally, because this is a capital gains issue.
Well, see, Steve, I would disagree with you there. And, well, I want to say this. As an entrepreneur who started about 14 different companies in my lifetime, I never started a business based upon my tax position or authority that state's going to give me a $300 credit. I'm going to go hire some. No, you know what it's about? It's about opportunity. I see a void in the marketplace. I see an opportunity. Give me some money. Let me go out. Let me capitalize it. Let me grow. Let me build it. Let me build a company. Let me fit that. Let me solve that need. That's what America's built upon. That's the greatness of this country. That's the greatness of our free enterprise system. It's not the tax authority. And you know, while I can appreciate that's assistive and that might be a benefit to the large multinational corporations that come in here that look at that, things of that nature, the game is changing. The multinationals don't give a hoot about the little guy in Arizona. And Arizona is all about our rugged individualism and the American opportunity. And that's what I'm trying to get started here.
You know, I've been saying it throughout the show, and the more I think about it, I'm not really sure how accurate it is to say it. I feel like that until the state gets its own affairs in order, until they balance the budget, there's very little that they could do for job, that the state could do for job creation. But I guess that's not necessarily true. Maybe you'd like to respond to that, Representative Moore.
I would, absolutely. There's a lot the state can do. First of all, let's get some of the regulatory holdbacks that are stopping us from doing things. Let's get the state land department to sell the land for down by Pecaco Peak so we can open up a switching yard down there. And that's going to bring immediately 222 jobs. Let's get the little regulations on zoning restrictions and things of that nature that stop people from opening up a business or having to jump through so many hoops that it becomes economically unfeasible for them to do things. Let's get them out of the way. That's what Arizona needs to do.
Okay.
And I totally agree with that. And in fact, we were talking a little bit about this before the show, too. The idea that Arizona's got some wonderful advantages. We've also got some disadvantages, too. One of them is that we don't have a port the way, say, California or Texas does. And yet we would be able to find a way to get, say, rail projects down to Guaymas, Mexico, or something to that effect, and bring the goods in through Arizona. But we've got a state land department that effectively doesn't quite know how to let go of land that should be privatized. And Arizona's got a disadvantage of having most of this land swallowed up in either federal reservation or state hands. And so we've really got to find a way to liberate that productive land capital, which right now is just being swallowed up in non-productive uses.
Okay. I'll play a couple more clips from State Senator Michelle Reagan. We asked her about private investment, and I suppose how to encourage it. If you play clip four, Chet.
Small companies rely on infusion of venture capital. Arizona has a very low rate of venture capital infused into our economy versus our surrounding states. This is a shame because we have a lot of venture capitalists in Arizona. We have people that have money that they're investing, that have the wealth. However, they are choosing to invest in companies outside of Arizona only because there's more incentives in other states for them to do their investing there.
Okay, well, that leads to the obvious broader question of how we are shaping up compared to other states. I know that Dennis was saying on the show a couple weeks ago that he was in Houston, Texas, and he was astounded at just how well the state of Texas is doing. So I guess my very broad question here is, well, why aren't we doing as good as Texas? What can we do to encourage more investment here that Texas is doing we're not?
See, we only have, what, 10 minutes?
we've got,
there's,
yeah.
There are a lot of advantages that places like Texas have. And I think we need to know what we can and can't fix. I mean, in some respects, you know, we can't fix the fact that we're geographically located where we are and things of that sort. And of course, the water port, I think, is important in a lot of cases. Climate's an important thing. We've got that advantage. But we're never going to have, say, MIT. You know, I mean, most of the, if you look at the amount of businesses that have been created by graduates of MIT, it's astounding. I think I've seen a statistic saying those types of businesses, when they put it all together, would account for, in terms of their value, about the 11th largest country in the world. Yeah, this is pretty substantial. Now, does that mean we shouldn't aspire to something like that? It certainly does mean we should aspire to that. But we also need to know that what we can change, we should, and a lot of that's policy oriented. And so I think right now where our barriers are basically structural, basically policy oriented in that sense. And so finding a way to reduce those barriers and let the private sector flourish, I think, is going to be important. But again, you know, Texas is unique, and Texas is special. A lot of states pale by comparison to Texas. And so, right, in a sense, we've got to be thinking about what's possible and what we know we can do. But right now, we're not even thinking that far ahead, unfortunately.
Okay. You can get clip six ready to go, Chet. We asked Senator Michelle Reagan about stealing businesses from other states. Oh, you know what? I think we've got the close of the show coming up on us here. So my profuse apologies to Michelle Reagan. We're not going to be able to play her clip. I want to thank all my guests on the show today, Representative John Fillmore, as well as Stephen Slavinsky, who's a senior economist at the Goldwater Institute. We've been talking about how to get the state back on its feet and how to get everybody in the state back on their feet. Next week, your regular host, Dennis Wilenchek, should be recovered and back on the show. This is Jack Wilenchek signing off on KFNX.
Thursdays at noon, the Makeover Advice Show with me, Diane Faith, the insider's guide to beauty for both men and women. Thursdays at noon, too fabulous to miss. Makeover,
makeover. Hi, I'm Dr. Bob Marshall, host of Healthline. Join me to get your nutrition and health-related questions answered and hear the latest breakthrough information for you and your family. This month, the real vitamin C is on special. Quantum C Complex is an antioxidant. It promotes healthy adrenals, collagen tissue, and immunity. Imagine, ascorbic acid alone is called vitamin C, yet it can be quickly oxidized and as such is a free radical. Without bioflavonoid cofactors, it may not be reduced or unoxidized. Not so in our Quantum C Complex. Get the real vitamin C complex. Buy two bottles, get the third one free. Call us at 800-370-3447. 800-370-3447. Experience nutrition that really works.
Healthline with Dr. Bob Marshall every Saturday at 9 a.m. here on KFNX News Talk Radio 1100.
You're listening to KFNX News Talk Radio 1100. Cape Creek, Phoenix. The home of Laura Ingraham. Weekdays 6 to 9 a.m. KFNX.